Maybe read one or two more in this round and come back to these poems later, leave the mythological poems till near the end. Maybe we'll, I don't know. Remember Strangelove, I kept calling you the prevert all the time. I hope you don't think I'm a prevert for talking about death all the time, but it's kind of a quality of life that we're kind of getting in shape for, which is a horrible thing, but it's kind of sad. And one of the further ironies of life, the more you study, the more you try to write, the more you try to create, all the time the clock is ticking and the closer you're getting to death, which instead of preparing you for something actually is, to me, the end. So I concentrate on this, not because I'm particularly morbid, but because these things actually do happen. They have to be dealt with. Sometimes the mind balks at it, not knowing how to handle it. How do you handle the Charles Whitman, the specs, the Sirhan Sirhan? Are we all potentially this way? Is humanity potentially depraved? Are we so frustrated that this is the only way that we can express ourselves? Can we understand these people as well as having sympathy for the people that are shot? These are the tremendous questions, I think, that alongside the political issues of choosing the lesser of two evils as president, or how we can successfully get out of a war without having more of our people killed. This quality of individual death, to me, is the other the three parts of this, of the death problem. The other part of the death problem is this horrible atrocity. It wasn't the atrocious part of the elderly battlefield nurse that she is going to die. It's very quiet. She's dying inside of her. Wally Brown was instantaneous. That is the horror of dying by a heart attack with no history of heart attacks in your family and dying at 34 in seemingly perfect health. The other one, of course, is the bodily brutality, which came out a bit in Teufel's Drach, this type of brutality and the ability to laugh about it, that only man can be perverse. Let us try another poem called Mrs. Godkin's Son. This is based on a true happening from Wisconsin, fantastic crime annals of Wisconsin, which I'm cataloging slowly over the years. I used to think Boston, you know, we just have gangland land slayings there with the Italians and some of the Irish that are brought in to help them out when they run out. When the Italians and the Sicilians get all killed off, they either have Anglos or they have Irish people help them out. And that doesn't touch us, really. You know, the good middle class people aren't touched by this. But here is a different kind of horror, the horror of a young man who is from a rural Wisconsin area, and the mother tells him that all women are whores and that he should stay away, that he should stay home, take care of her until she dies, that he should dedicate his life to his mother. Well, this, sadly enough, did work, that he really believed her. She poisoned his mind for a few years. I've changed the name to Godkin. It's an obvious, terrible pun, that this she is, after all, supposedly God's kin, as we all are, but these atrocities do happen. The son, after the death of the mother, couldn't face society, and he used to go out at night and dig up coffins and bring home women and try to play the masseur and revive them so that he could place mother in this room, which he kept all the time in perfect condition. The rest of the house was like pigsty, but her room was almost like a shrine. And it does have just slight religious overtones as far as trying to preserve the alleged purity of his mother when all the time she had been poisoning him against the flesh, which to me is one of the greatest imaginable sins to this type of perversion. So I will also, he decapitated some of the people and shrank the heads and gave them to the children and said that they came from the Philippines. Because it did stand up, society believed it, because this was around the time of the Second World War when another American atrocity, bringing heads back, you know, and pots and remains of Viet Cong, or in the old days it used to be the Indians. I remember reading newspaper articles about little old ladies from Boston, not far from where I live, used to send away and get Indian bones from out here, I suppose, and used to make buttons for their dresses out of them. So, you know, this idea of collecting pots and digging up people's graves and putting them in museums is nothing new to our society. And if they dug up our graves, you know, what would happen? But this is all the atrocity. Not to make you sick exactly, but he took some of the skin off many of his people and made lampshades out of them too, which were greatly admired by his neighbors. All right, I'll get into the poem. Mrs. Godkin's Son, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, 1968. His mind, disposed to her rantings, echoed the taunt that all women are whores. He kept the kettle whistling 10 years and dared not sweep the dust beneath the braided rug of death's bedroom. Nights amid obituaries, he studied like Rasputin, the occult and mystical, for he had a special way with women. Moonlit, his shovel clanked against a treasure house of female coffins. He sacked the overripe bodies home, but they failed to breathe beyond the sink where his masseur hands fondled in love to restore one mother amid her heirlooms. Dishes were piled, green scum thick. The garbage of years grew like a dump. Only her room was a virginal shrine to the memory that she alone was his, masked and blind to see that need fails to carry flesh beyond the grave. Heads that refused to murmur to his touch were shrunk and dulled to neighbor kids who lied to parents about the Philippines. They smiled and said at least they weren't American heads, poor, harmless old man. But empty graves aroused them. They called to find a wall of bodies dressed out like deer, hung gentle as lovers, and no mother stirred to rail against lust. You can sleep tight tonight. Our National Guard is awake.